Hello, it's Simon Clough here. This is the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton.
Coming up on this special episode, a collection of just some of the Green Jumper highlights in 2025.
Oh, that's smashing.
It was certainly a momentous year for the Green Jumper, receiving national and international acclaim. More of that later. But in this special episode, you'll hear stories and memories from throughout Cloughy's career. From his first comments to a future England international.
Brian Clough was walking out of his office coming across and he seen me and he said, "Are you one of the new apprentices, son?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You look very smart in that suit.
Yeah.
Did you nick it?" And that was his first words to me. "Did you nick it?"
To his touchline orders for a flying winger.
He would say, "Stand on that white line and don't move." And if I moved, he said, "If you move, you're off. You're off." And I'd stand there. He said, "Don't worry, I'll get the ball to you," and stuff like that, and things like that. Just little things where your positioning is to make the pitch wider.
Plus, there's a memorable visit to the changing room.
Cloughy was absolutely lovely to us. One of my favourite things is one of my friends, Basher. He'd got an earring in, and Cloughy spotted the earring. And he says, "Young man, this is a man's dressing room, not a tart's. Get it out."
Oh,
my mate Basher nearly, God rest his soul, because he passed away several years ago, almost ripped his ear off trying to get this earring out because Cloughy had said no.
And the interview of a lifetime.
I was mesmerised. It remains the highlight of my life, probably, as well as my career.
All that and much more in this special Clough collection. Yes, welcome along to this special edition of The Green Jumper, looking back at some of the interviews of 2025. Let's begin back in January, a very good place to start, and the fanzine called The Brian, named after the great man. It was launched over 30 years ago, and I spoke to one of the regular contributors at the time, Bob Stevens.
Football fanzines are something that really, it was showing everybody else that football supporters are not thick. In those days, we were seen as either hooligans or, you know, Neanderthals or whatever, and we weren't. We were intelligent people. Yeah, yeah, we knew about the game and we could actually converse, and it gave us a voice.
Yeah, because in those, as you say, in those days, there weren't things like online fan forums. It was an important way of support. No, the internet didn't exist, so that was an important way of supporters sharing their views, I guess, not least in a tongue-in-cheek way.
Yeah. Anything that there was written about Forest was probably either on the back of the Evening Post or it was written in the club program, which was, of course, very sanitised, and you can't, you know, things are there for us to praise. Things are there for us to say, "Hang on, this isn't very good, we don't like this, and we should have a voice." It's as Cloughy said, it's our game.
Yes, he did.
It's not anybody else's. It's our game. We should have a say. And it actually did point out to people that football fans are intelligent.
As part of the team of contributors, you actually got invited to meet Cloughy himself, I understand, in the dressing room. How did that come about?
Well, we... It was... Can you remember when Cloughy took it on himself to... smack a couple of fans who came on the pitch?
Yes,
it was at the QPR, the quarter final.
That's right.
And that January, I think Forest were undefeated in 9 games, and Cloughy should have got manager of the month. No two ways about it. But because he'd been a little bit naughty or totally Cloughy, they said no. It's going to go to Alex Ferguson, and we were in the news house, and we thought, this isn't right. There's no, Cloughy deserves this. So we said, can we give him an award? So we spoke to the landlord, Pete McDonald, and we says, "Pete, any chance of getting a gallon bottle of scotch?" And he says, "Yeah," he told us how much. So we all put our fivers or something in. Then I was working with somebody who was a regular in Alan Hill pub. And Alan Hill was, of course, the head of recruitment at Forest at the time. So we said, can you just ask Alan if we can give this to Brian. So a couple of days later, the message came, yeah, next game, can you come down? So we went in got down to the ground, and we're all waiting outside. We got this massive bottle of scotch. And the doors opened. They took us into the changing room. And it's like, fantastic, we're in the changing room. They just sort of like left us there.
Yeah.
After about 5 minutes, the door swings open. In comes Cluffy with his squash racket.
Yeah.
Oh, you're lots the ones who write about me, is it? And he obviously knew who we were. And so we said, look, we presented it. The Evening Post came down.
Mm.
They took a picture of us, which appeared on the, I think it was on page 3 of the Evening Post a few days later.
Oh, yeah.
And we're in there, and Cluffy was absolutely lovely to us. One of my favourite things is one of my friends, Basher.
Mm.
He'd got an earring in, and Cluffy spotted the earring. And he says, young man, this is a man's dressing room, not a tart's. Get it out.
Oh, dear.
And my mate Basher nearly, God rest his soul, because he passed away several years ago,
oh,
almost ripped his ear off trying to get this earring out because Cluffy had said no.
Yeah.
But we did that, and he was, we had the picture took, and Cluffy was, who's got their hand on me wallet? And he was absolutely lovely to us.
Oh,
and
that
was it. We got shown out. And it was a fantastic memory. It's still the screensaver on my computer.
Oh, I bet it is. What a souvenir photo that must be. And of course, he got many of those giant gallon bottles of whiskey over the years, didn't he, as manager of
perhaps
the month?
Perhaps we shouldn't have given him a gallon bottle of whiskey with what was to follow.
Well, no, but you did what you thought was the right thing.
Yeah. What we did do, we bought it. It was a bottle of Bell's whiskey.
Oh, yes.
And as we took the picture, he refused to have Bell's whiskey showing. We had to have the other side. So if you see the picture, it's the blank side.
Yes.
Because he says, I'm not giving them free advertising.
Oh, good one. No, true. And he hadn't got the authentic award, had he, that month, as you say? So,
no, he hadn't.
It was only right, I suppose. But yeah, fantastic memory. And
I think he really appreciated it.
Yeah, it showed how much the fans thought of him at a very difficult time, really. And he did get a lot of support from the fans. I remember there was a poll, I think, at BBC Radio Nottingham, and it was like 98% in favour of what he'd done. I think even the local chief constable came out in support, but the FA didn't. He ended up with a touchline ban, but that's another story. And talking of another story, here's the grandson of Cluffy's trainer and coach, Jimmy Gordon, with an amazing anecdote about the European Cup. Craig McLaughlin recalled what happened after the first European Cup final victory when Cluffy's Forest beat Malmo.
When they came back subsequently following their win in Munich, Jimmy had the European Cup in its, I think it was a grey sack at the time, from the plane, literally put it on the back seat of his car and drove it to our house. So, so that night we had it on top of our old television in my mum and dad's house overnight, which was kind of amazing. So I've got a fabulous picture of myself and my little brother in our pyjamas with the cup there. But the next morning we went out on the little green opposite where my mum and dad lived, and we did a lap of honour with the European Cup to the amazement of everybody stood at the bus stop. It was quite a fantastic memory. And we had a few friends over and had some photos with it as well.
Hello, I'm Des Walker. It's been named one of the best football podcasts in the world. You'll never beat the Green Jumper.
The fans used to sing, "You'll never beat him," and I went to his home to meet him. I began by asking Des if he could remember meeting Brian Clough for the first time.
I can, funny enough, you know. Go back and me mum and dad were old-fashioned, and I can remember my first day, they said, I'll put a suit on. And looking back on it, I'm not sure why you put a suit on to come to a football club for your first day. But that's it. That was the way they grew up. So I put a suit on. I was walking through the car park of the main stand with my dad.
Yes.
And then as I was walking into the, which is now the Robin Hood, it was the old Jubilee Club. And that's where we was all meeting. Brian Clough was walking out of his office coming across and he seen me and he said, are you one of the new apprentices, son? And I said, yes. And he said, you look very smart in that suit.
Yeah.
Did you nick it? And that was his first words to me. Did you nick it? So that was, that's Brian Clough, the character, you know, and daunting character, especially in your first day.
I bet he was. Had you only just sort of seen him on television before then?
I'd just seen him winning European Cups and, you know, and obviously he was that prominent on television at the time.
Yeah.
And he dominated the screens he was on, you know, and in the next 15 years, I found nothing different. He dominated every situation he was in. So what you see on the screen is exactly who he was as a person.
Yes, yeah. I think you were playing at right back initially, but Cloughy had some important advice that moved you into the middle.
I came as a right back, right midfield. And funny because Teddy Sheringham, we used to play against each other as Sunday teams, and I was a right winger.
Right.
And when Teddy came to the club, funny enough, and see me, obviously I was a centre half playing for my country then. Teddy said to me, "I can't believe you ended up as a centre half. You was a right winger. How'd you end up there?" So, yeah. It was I came as a right back, right stroke right winger.
Yeah.
And we used to play at Grove Farm, which is like a local pitches down Nottingham. Where if you go there every Sunday, you see thousands of teams playing Sunday football.
Right.
And we used to have one of the pitches for Forest under 18s. And Clough used to come to all the youth team games. Every, like, unless they were away, a long way away,
yeah,
he was at all the games, especially the home when Forest were at home, he'd come and watch us in the morning. And obviously, he stood on the touchline, and I'm right back. And all I could hear him was shouting at me. And I think that had a big influence on me moving back in the middle. Because I played in the middle one time and I played really well. And I thought, he's off me back. I haven't got him right next to me shouting, son, can you throw a ball? Can you do this? Can you do that? And it's funny because in the reserves, it's quite quiet. And he'd be in the stands and he'd be shouting, Desmond, Desmond, Desmond. And I'll be in centre-half. I know you can hear me. Stop ignoring me. But I could just not bother look at him and just keep going that way. Whereas at right back, he's right next to you.
You couldn't ignore him.
I think that was one of the reasons I ended up with centre-half.
Yeah. Was it always Desmond? Never Des?
Yeah, he had that way. A little way of patronising you a little bit. Desmond, and he's called Teddy Sherman Edward, you know, and a bit like your mum scolding you. So he had that way, and it was part of his charisma and part of his armoury, I think, to have sank on you a little bit, you know. But you got used to him pretty quickly. You got comfortable. I got comfortable around him, and I think at the end of the day, to play for him, you can't be scared of him. You know what I mean, yeah? And as much as the likes of Brian Clough, Alex Ferguson, they're fearsome characters, but they are, at the end of the day, they're there to win football matches, not to scare you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the genius in probably both of them, especially Clough, I don't know Alex Ferguson that well, but he won a lot of things. But the genius in Brian Clough is he treated everybody different without having favourites. So he man-managed people, and he was a psychologist. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But he didn't really have his favourites, and I think we said he didn't like anybody. So we stuck together. He didn't really like anybody. So if you don't like anybody, you ain't got no favourites. No. He only liked you if you played well between 3 and 5. After that, he didn't like you. So we was all in the same boat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's more from Des later when he talks about his memorable goal against Luton. And on the subject of scoring goals, of course, Cloughy used to love talking about his own fantastic goal-scoring record.
I used to get one or two goals every season, give or take 30.
Yes, he was the fastest to 250 league goals, and someone who loved watching him play at Middlesbrough was Jeff Redman. In episode 97, he told me about all the newspaper cuttings he used to save about his footballing idol.
If ever you want an example of hero worship, it was me to Brian as a player. I used to try and kick the ball like him. I used to try and walk like him to school, you know, with my satchel on my back, everything. And I used to write his signature, you know, he used to create his signature in free periods when we were at school or when the teacher wasn't looking. But my memories, I've thought about this for the podcast. My memories were of his behaviour, his long raking passes from midfield, because he had this tremendous shot and foot and accuracy with his right foot. So the long passes out to the wings where the two wingers, mainly Eddie Holliday and Billy Day, would pick up the ball from him. But then also that where he would go out of the game for quite long periods of time. And then suddenly he would ignite, he would light up when the ball came into the box. And then all the criticisms of him were just null and void. He could head, he could climb, he had speed over three or four meters. Everything changed when he was in the box.
And there's lots more from Jeff in the episode called Clough Stories, Top Scorer. There were some more boyhood memories in episode 90. My guest was Ben Bellamy, who recalled being a young lad in Derby and witnessing the real-life Pied Piper effect of Brian Clough.
I was quite a young lad and, you know, we were all aware, I think we were aware of Brian as he's the only world-famous person I've ever had that sort of contact with. And he was world-famous, as we know. So we're all aware of Brian, but as a kid, you're more aware of Brian as, well, that's Brian Clough. I don't know why he's Brian Clough. What he's done, it was for me after the football times at Derby, and we knew he was the football manager and such, but TV personality, but general local, the biggest person in our area. Give an example. As a very young boy, I remember being allowed to go down to Blenheim Parade with my oldest brother, and we went. He took me down there to where the chip shop on. I think it's probably a Wednesday. I think it's a Wednesday night, certainly midweek, and down to the chip shop. And there was loads of boys, well, mainly boys, a few girls, hanging around outside the chip shop as you expect. There's a youth club up the road, but they're all hanging around outside the chip shop, but none of them with chips. And then car pulled up. And Brian gets out and he sort of looks and, "Well then, young man, hello, good to see you. Are you behaving yourself?" sort of thing. Walked into the chip shop at the front and all the kids followed him in. In a big line, all flowed in. And I went, "My brother, come on, pull me in." And we stand behind and Brian walks to the front and he looked round. Chips all around, young men. And he had them serving out cones of chips. He used to be able to get what we called a 10p cone, which was a twirl of the paper.
Yeah.
It just half a dozen chips in or something. And that was just his sort of way of giving something back, I think, to the community.
Yes.
But you're in all, even at that age, even though I wasn't there for the championship at Derby and such, things were happening down the A52. Or it's probably at that time he may have even been Leedsway, who knows? But he was giving something back to the community, and it was Brian.
Yes, yes, and it was that sort of almost local celebrity status, I guess, before the modern day celebrity was known. Oh, yeah,
hugely, and I think in those days there probably weren't so many celebrities, were there?
No,
I mean we only had three TV channels then, maybe four. No, yeah. Probably three still then. And your celebrities were the film stars from America coming over to interview on Parkinson or Muhammad Ali. Of course, Brian on Parkinson being interviewed. It was literally world famous man, but not holed away in a house somewhere. Henry's on Ferrers Way and then later up in Corndon, but in the community. Not many people have and can carry the sort of charisma which he just carried with him. And it's, they call it the X Factor, don't they, these days?
That's right.
David Bowie, he's one. Brian Clough, Muhammad Ali. There's not many who have that sort of level of charisma who can command an audience.
What I want to say very briefly, because I've been told to keep it down to 2 minutes. Now, the guy who told me that must be a bloody idiot, for a start.
Cluffy once again on fine form there, and he was on fine form when Ben Bellamy and his dad went round to his house to ask for a favour. That's also in episode 90, released in May 2025. It's called Clough Stories, Chips All Round. And in the following month, we heard some poignant memories from Paul Ellis, the former chairman of the Nottingham Forest Supporters Club. Paul became the centre of media attention on the day the sad news was announced that Brian Clough had passed away. It was September 2004.
The media needed people to talk to, as you can imagine. So I was at work, and for some reason, I didn't notice that my phone had already rung two or three times, and I guess I was in the middle of something and perhaps not able to answer. But eventually, early afternoon, I believe, my wife actually rang me to say, did you know that Brian had passed away? And I think they want to talk to you. So then I looked at my phone and thought, crikey, yes, I've got six missed messages already. So I did ring somebody back, I can't remember who, and they said, well, could you come down to the City Ground? Luckily, I didn't have any other appointments that day, so I said to the team, I'll be gone, I might be back or I might not. Anyway, so I then went off down to the City Ground into the main stand car park, and there were TV vans, radio vans, reporters like I'd never really seen.
Yes. And you then must have spent a long time just fielding all these media inquiries outside the ground.
Yes, and it happened to be, again, I will not forget the date he died, because that was actually my wife's birthday. And we were due to go out for a meal in the evening. So, yes, I thought, well, there's still plenty of time, but I just can't believe I must have spoken to every TV company in the UK and beyond, and every radio station from Radio 1, oddly, Radio 2, Radio 4, Radio 5 Live, obviously, Radio Nottingham, obviously, and some of the commercial radio stations as well, and all the TV stations. So, yes, I was probably a media celebrity for that day. But again, you know, I had to think what to say, and I couldn't really talk about him from a personal point of view, but obviously I could appreciate what he'd done for my team.
That's right, yes. And I guess in a way that helped to sort of skirt around the emotional side of it, because a lot of people were directly upset by it, weren't they? And they brought shirts and floral tributes and things on the day. What was the mood like?
Yes, I mean, very much it was a somber day, and as you say, there were many tributes already starting to accumulate by those gates, and in fact scarves tied to the gates and other memorabilia, shirts, etc. So yes, it was a somber day, but I think it had to be, and the way I treated it was as a celebration of how wonderful he'd been, obviously as a football player and manager, and particularly as a manager of my team, but also I could relate of how other people had told me what a wonderful person he was.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, 2025 was a remarkable year for The Green Jumper. It was named as one of the best football podcasts in the world in the 2025 Sports Podcast Awards, and it was up against some big names with huge corporate backing. Later in the year, it was highly commended in the Independent Podcast Awards held in London. And those awards are for pods which are free from corporate ties and include productions by solo creators. The judges described it as a super unique podcast and praised the depth of the research, the quality of the guests, and the fact it's still uncovering new stories about Brian Clough. Back to the start of the year now, and I was invited onto TV and radio programmes to talk about the 50th anniversary of Clough's arrival at Nottingham Forest. One of the interviews was at Notts TV with my former radio colleague, Mark Dennison.
Staying with sport then, we're going to look back to this week, actually, 50 years ago, when a man called Brian Clough first walked through the doors of the City Ground. Clough, who, of course, took the Reds from the second division up to becoming champions of England's top flight just a year later, and then to become champions of Europe 2 years back-to-back. Here's a man who knows many a great story about the great man. Here's Marcus Alton, the host of the Green Jumper podcast. And for Marcus, this week has not only been a celebration of half a century since Cloughy entered our city, but has also seen Marcus being shortlisted for a national podcast award. And I'm delighted to say he is with me now in the studio. Hello.
Hi, Mark. Good to see you.
You too. 50 years.
Yes. Amazing to think it's half a century, isn't
it? It's incredible,
it?
Isn't it?
And since he walked into the City Ground, and it was a whirlwind, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing also to think that some people thought it was a gamble at the time because it was his fourth club in 15 months. But, you know, he transformed Forest. They were on the verge of bankruptcy. Fans disillusioned. Turned things round. People like John Robertson, who were in the reserves, turned him into a European champion.
You were lucky enough to meet Cloughy several times.
Yes.
I'm always intrigued because I'm slightly jealous because I never got the chance to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued to know whether he was as kind of large as life, if you like.
Yes.
Off camera and off mic as he was in interviews.
Yes. Oh, the aura around him was just amazing. I mean, I interviewed him several times. And, you know, even before the interview began, it was just the atmosphere was electric. I remember going to a book signing as well, and grown men were queuing up for his autograph, shaking with nerves. And one of them said they couldn't even sign their signature on the credit card slip, you know, because they were so nervous. But he was great with me.
Can you kind of sum up? Because people always talk about Cloughy as, you know, he was definitely one of a kind,
yes.
So unique. But what was it about him that made him such a special person, but manager as well?
Yes. As a person, he could get on with anybody, and people related to him. But even people who weren't interested in football wanted to hear what he had to say. In football, his man management was just off the scale. He knew how to get the best out of players and concentrate on their strengths rather than what they couldn't do. But also, if a player had done really well in a game and they were full of themselves, he'd bring them down to earth with a suitable comment. And likewise, if a player hadn't done so well and were a bit down in the dumps, he'd say, "Hey, young man, great performance today. Do the same next week." And he'd feel $1 million. And it was just those little tactics that he used to get the best out of people.
Yeah.
In August and September, we heard some great stories from Malcolm Bramley, who first met Cloughy when he was assistant secretary at Sunderland and went on to work for him as club secretary at Derby. Malcolm was a guest in two entertaining episodes and recalled a classic tale about Brian's visit to a church service.
Yes, my dad was a Methodist minister, and when I moved to Derby, remembering that I was still only 21, my dad got in touch with a minister called John Tudor, who was the minister of the big Methodist church in the centre of Derby. And John was a big football fan. So every so often I used to invite him to a match and would sit with him in the director's box. And one day he said, "Do you reckon we could organise a sportsman service for one Sunday night?" So I said, "Yeah, I don't think that'd be a problem." So we talked about it, and eventually we organised this service, and there were some of the players, the directors, cricketers, rugby players, etc., were going to be at this service on a Sunday night. I was due to read one of the lessons, and Brian had said that he would come along. So the day arrived, and he was due to pick me up about 6:15. And 6:15 came and went. The service due to start at 6:30. So I rang him up and I said, "Where are you?" He said, "Why?" He said, I'm just with the kids." I said, "The sportsman service." Completely forgot. He said, "I'll be down in a minute." So he picked me up. We tore into Derby, and the church was opposite the main Derby Hospital.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And we tore into, there was no parking in the streets. We couldn't find a parking place. So we tore into the hospital, and he pulled up in the ambulance area. And he said, have you got a piece of paper? I said, yeah. He said, right. He said, can you write this down? And I remember this word for word. He said, this is Brian Clough. I am with God over the road. Come and get me if you need me. And he put the note in front of the windscreen wipers. And we went off and we dashed into the church and upstairs. They'd already gone up, the few people who were going to be in the pulpit. They'd already gone up. We were that tight for time. Dashed in there. And John Tudor proceeded to give this wonderful sermon, which was actually based on one of the matches we'd been at. And Brian, in those days, the managers used to sit in the director's box the first half, and then they'd go down the touchline the second half. And the linesman had made an awful decision, and he'd shouted out, what's the use of having a bloody flag if you don't wave it?
Yes.
And John had said to me that I've got my sermon. I've got my sermon sorted. So he gave this great sermon, which was about what's the use of having a flag if you don't wave it? What's the use of having a church if you don't attend it, etc., etc. So at the end of it, the end of the sermon, Brian leant over and he didn't realise he was on the mic. And he said, Vicar, he said, that was effing magnificent. And you heard the gasp. There must have been, I mean, churches in those days packed on a Sunday night. So there must have been 800 people in there.
Oh.
And the shock of hearing this word. And he realized straight away what he'd said. And he whispered to me, he said, I've made a right mess up there, haven't I? So at the end of the service, we went downstairs into the a little waiting area. And he said, I'm really, really sorry, Vicar. Please accept my apologies. And he pulled out £100 in notes. You know, this is 1968, 69. £100, quite a lot of money in those days.
Yes.
And he said, I'm really, really sorry. Take that, he said, and put it in your swear box. And so that was a service that I'm sure many of the people who are there will, if they're still alive, will never have forgotten.
That's Malcolm Bramley there, and thanks to the Roker Report for putting us in touch. Another occasion that will never be forgotten by one of my guests was back in 1979. Alicia Rudzka was a young trainee journalist at the time and secured an exclusive interview after writing to Brian at Nottingham Forest.
My tutor was just brilliant, and he knew all the background to the strike that had happened in Nottingham at that time. And knew that Brian Clough wasn't having anything to do with the local paper, the Nottingham Post. And so he said, weave that into your letter and say, you know, you really like his stance on that, and tell him how, you know, you've been a lifelong fan. So I did all of that, but I still didn't think I'd get a reply. So, yeah, absolutely gobsmacked.
Did he invite you down to the ground then, the city ground, to meet him?
He did indeed. One Friday morning in December. He said, come and meet me at the city ground. So off I went with my tape recorder, 10 o'clock in the morning, and just, you know, got ushered in and had to wait for him to arrive.
Yes, I know there are many stories of journalists who've had to wait in the corridor for hours on end just for that few moments with him. Was it a long wait for you?
No, it absolutely wasn't. He came through quite quickly, and he looked exactly as he looked on any match day in his jersey.
Oh, was it the green jumper?
Was the green jumper.
Oh, fantastic.
I was mesmerised. I asked him the questions and then just watched his mouth move, basically. And if I'm honest, I didn't really hear what he was saying back to me. I was just couldn't take it in that I was sitting with the great man. It remains that the highlight of my life, probably, as well as my career. And it's one of those things that, you know, whenever you're in a situation where you have to do icebreakers and they go, what's your claim to fame? that's my claim to fame, because I just think, even now, I just think I'm so lucky to have interviewed this man.
Hello, this is Franz Carr. You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton, highly commended in the Independent Podcast Awards. And definitely, you've got to listen to this because it's a great interview. And he's interviewed so many different players in the past, and he knows his history. Thank you.
It was episode 99 when I spoke to flying winner Franz Carr, who described what it was like playing for the Miracle Manager.
I think all the players who played for him, especially at that time, you wanted to please him. So I think it was more about listening to his instructions. We all got taught manners, respect, you know, anything you can think of, which was small details. Cluffy had that off to a T. It's only when you get older you realise that he installed all the ingredients for what we are today. All the players, I mean, Marcus, you've met them all, and you'll see that the players from our era are all respectful, good guys. And that's all down to Cluffy.
Franz also recalled Cluffy's touchline instructions during a match.
He would say, stand on that white line and don't move. And there's games where you think, if the crowd actually knew what was being said to me, they think, what the hell's going on? So I used to have to stand on the white line, and if I moved, he said, if you move, you're off. You're off. And I'd stand there. He said, don't worry, I'll get the ball to you, and stuff like that, and things like that. Just little things where your positioning is to make the pitch wider. And he said, if they can't see you, he said, my job is to get them to get you the ball. Just basic, simple things. But there's times in games where I had to stand there, and I'd be there for a minute or so, and he said, if you move, you're off. just certain things which will stick in your mind. Brilliant times.
Now back to another Cluffy player and a former teammate of Franz Carr, Des Walker. His speed and defensive skills were a key part of Forest's success as Cluffy rebuilt another trophy-winning side. But it's actually a goal by Des that he still gets asked about.
It built over two or three, 4 years. The crowd are willing me every time I won the ball and went forward to go forward and get a goal. And I knew I was never going to be known for how many goals I scored. It was always how good a defender I was. So I was never that bothered. But the crowd willed me, and it kind of just, it was this thing that's built over the years. Des is going to get a goal. Des ain't got a goal. Des ain't got a goal. And anyhow, we played Luton, and it was one of them dead-end games where we'd basically lost 1-0 because it's a 90-something minute, I think it was.
Yeah, it was late, yeah.
And I laid it forward and just kept going. And then kept going And that was it, went in the top corner. For me, it was fantastic because of the crowd. Do you know what I mean? I think it was a bit like they've witnessed something of Desi's that no one else has witnessed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
They were willing you on to do it, weren't they?
But
they really were.
People come up to me now, and sometimes a little bit, I think, hold on, yeah. A lot of people come up to me and they say, oh, I was there with 92, or I just left. And and I think my whole career about this one goal. What about the other 800 games I played? That shows you how much of a mark it is in their day. They were there the day they scored a little bit, you know.
Yes.
So I think if I'd have got two, I'd have disappointed them. So ending up with one was perfect.
It was unique, that's it.
Yeah.
Now, as well as the recorded podcasts, there have been more live Green Jumper events during 2025. One of them was a charity evening at the Boot Room next to Forest City Ground, while others have featured Cluffy Nostalgia with groups from the University of the Third Age, or U3A, including this one in the Nottinghamshire village of Calverton.
Good morning. Can you all hear me okay? Wonderful. Well, thank you ever so much for inviting me along. I hope over the next 50 minutes or so, you'll enjoy hearing some funny stories about Brian, some poignant memories, and a collection of golden nuggets is how I describe it. These are all related to my book, Brian Clough, The Lost Tapes, which is my latest book. I've written 5 about Cluffy, supporting good causes. I was fortunate to interview him and meet him on several occasions. As you probably may have heard in the media, he could be quite unpredictable, larger-than-life character. On one occasion, he gave me a huge bear hug, a kiss on the cheek, and said, young man, you've made my day. And then another occasion, I interviewed him, and he said, I'd like to take you around with me for the next 4 or 5 weeks, because you definitely make me better looking than I am. And he said, it's understandable, obviously. And I was flattered. I was flattered by that. I'd take that from Cluffy every day of the week.
And I'm pleased to say there'll be more live events in the next 12 months. Keep a lookout on the Tribute website for details. Also coming up is my conversation with one of Cluffy's European Cup winners. It's Bryn Gunn. And here's an exclusive Green Jumper preview, taking us back to that 1980 final.
Frank Gray had been injured from arguably just before half-time, so they weren't sure whether to take him off at half-time and chuck me on or all this business. But he soldiered on, and then roughly 10 minutes to go, he couldn't carry on. So this is the big bit, the confidence booster I really need. He says, you're going on, and Peter Taylor says to Cluffy, he says, well, we're in this shit now. And I heard him say that. I was trying to get my tracksuit off at the time, and I couldn't because I was panicking. And I heard him say that, so it wasn't a pat on the back that I got. But luckily, I come on, I got a couple of touches, and we end up hanging out 1-0. Yeah. I'm not saying we were the best side on the night, but when you got Shilton in goal and Burns in Lloydie, rock solid, and Burt was up front, you got a chance. Afterwards, we were based in the mountains. So Cluffy's give the usual, nobody's going out tonight. We're going to go back, think what you've achieved, and see you in the morning. So anyway, we all get back on the bus. We go back in to the hills. The big boys, Lloydie, Burnsy, Schultz, Viv, all down the fire escape, taxi into Madrid. And me and John O'Hare stayed in the hotel and had a few drinks, raided the kitchen. I was rooming with John, Solly, we always call him Solly, John O'Hare. And I always remember, went to bed, I had the medal in my hand, and I woke up cuddling it and all like that. I just looked at it in the morning. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it, mate. But yeah, we had a few drinks. It was all right. It was a good night.
That's Bryn Gunn, a future guest on The Green Jumper. Well, we're coming to the end of this special Clough collection, and I must thank you, of course, for listening. If you've enjoyed any of the episodes or this collection, please support the pod by giving it a 5-star review and buying a souvenir, perhaps, or a book from the Tribute website, brianclough.com. That'll help the running costs of the website and the pod, and hopefully maintain free access. There's just one more guest to mention, and he was a close friend of Brian's for many years. Colin Shields was one of the few people, besides the players, who Brian would allow on the team coach. Colin told me about some of his memories and the effect Brian had on his life. One of the stories involved a funny incident during Cluffy's retirement.
I used to go and pick him up, and we'd go to various things. And he says to me, oh, I've got to call in at the new stadium, you know, Pride Park.
Pride Park, yes.
He says, I've got to call in and pick some stuff up. So I'm driving, of course, and I drove him up to Pride Park. He says, come on, come in with me. So I went into reception, and the phone was ringing. And he picked the phone up, and he says, Brian Clough here, can I help you? I often wonder what the caller thought. And just as things was getting a bit, you know, amusing, the receptionist reappeared and took the phone off him. So we had a bit of a laugh about that.
Yes.
That's Colin Shields there, one of the many great guests we've been fortunate to hear from. I hope you can join me next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.